compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
I'm your Huckleberry.
Hey, I'm your Huckleberry. That's right. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show, and thank you for listening. We may or may not be having phone issues today, so if you try to call me, 888-914-9149.
we're having phone
well,
issues.
Well, let's test that. I don't know. I know.
I'm
an optimist.
I just got video of our headquarters, and it is dead. Green Bay, where everything routes through, is silent.
No, inbound.
It's super eerie. It's no lights. No, there's always blinking lights everywhere. It's like the bridge of the Star Trek. It is completely silent. So for the time being, I'll let you know as soon as the phones are back.
You're ruining
up, I promise.
The theater of the moment right now.
I don't want to give people a false hope. I'm like, I'm trying to call in and I can't call in.
Well, I know a lot of people who they will call in anyway just because they like to, you know, call in. So I just wanted to let everybody know, kind of like what Cyrus was saying, but more optimistic, that... Yeah, there seems to be a bit, there's some sort of a power outage or something that is affecting the phone company, which affects us. But in due time, let's hope and pray that the phone lines come back on again, in which case we'll get you on the air. But I have a lot to talk to you about. And I was, you know, it's funny, just free association, Cyrus, you know how that goes, where somebody says a word, you think about something else. I find it fascinating. And it just happened to me as you were speaking, because you were talking about how eerie it was and how all the lights were off. And that reminded me of, not that I want to talk about this per se, but it was just free association. That reminded me of 9/11, when within a couple of hours after the attacks were underway, the transportation secretary, I think it was Norman Mineta, if I'm not mistaken, he shut down the airspace for the United States. So all the flights were grounded. And a buddy of mine, his name is Marcus Grody. He runs an organization called the Journey Home Network, the Coming Home Network. I should know this. I've known Marcus forever. And he called me that morning. I was at home. He was traveling. And he called me from, I think he was in Cincinnati. And he says, kind of like what you just said, Cyrus, he says, it's so weird. I mean, everything is shut down. There are no flights coming or going. Everybody's in the airport trying to figure out how to get out of here. We're going to rent a car. What are we going to do? And when you said that, it reminded me of his comment 20 years ago of being in a similar situation, or just, you know, very different situation, but similar in the sense that the normal blinking, flashing lights and all the things that pertain to an airport were simply gone. Everything was still. So free association leads me to an unrelated but kind of related topic, and that's back to the airlines. If you do any flying at all, I do a fair amount of flying. So if you do any flying at all, you know that the airlines are extremely strict, very stringent about the mask rule. And have you done any flying lately, Cyrus? I mean, like in the last 6 months, have you gone anywhere that would require you to be in a commercial airliner?
No, it's been about a year.
Okay. Well, lucky you. In a way, lucky you, because it's very heavily enforced. And, you know, we've talked on the program about so many of the incidents that have taken place on commercial flights in the last couple of years where people become belligerent and violent and they hit flight attendants and planes have to be grounded or turned around and people arrested when the plane lands, that kind of thing. A lot of it has to do with non-mask compliance, people who don't want to wear the mask. And of course, most people, I think, comply. And my perception as I walk through the airports is that every single last person is wearing a mask. And those who may resist wearing a mask, at some point or another, they realize that their resistance is futile, to coin a phrase. And this story caught my eye, came out yesterday. The CEOs of two major airlines, so Southwest Airlines, that CEO's name is Doug Parker, and Gary Kelly, the CEO I have the names backward. Doug Parker is the CEO of American Airlines, excuse me, and Gary Kelly is the CEO of Southwest Airlines. And they did a Senate committee hearing on financial support for the airline industry that they have received and that they hope to receive during the pandemic. And they came out publicly before Congress saying that mask mandates don't work. And that struck me as very surprising, because the airlines, and I realize that probably they're just enforcing what the federal government is telling them, but they themselves have been very, even draconian, to the point of saying, if you want to sip your cup of coffee, you can lower your mask just long enough to sip it, then you have to put the mask back up again. So here's how it's being reported here. This is an article by Ryan Saavedra. These two CEOs said this week that they do not believe that the Biden administration continued mask mandate requiring travelers to wear masks while flying serves much benefit, considering the fact that airplanes have advanced filtration systems that remove nearly all airborne contamination from the cabin. So CNN has a bit of reportage in this article. Both Kelly and Parker, again, from American Airlines and Southwest Airlines, they have each announced plans to retire as CEOs in the coming months, mentioning that high-grade HEPA air filters, H-E-P-A, HEPA air filters, not HIPAA, those are the provisions to keep your medical data private, but HEPA filters on airplanes capture virtually all airborne contamination, and air quality is helped by how frequently cabin air is exchanged with fresh air from outside the cabin. I think the case is very strong that masks don't add much, if anything, in the air cabin environment, said Kelly. And Kelly, again, is the CEO of Southwest Airlines. He said it is very safe and very high quality compared to any other indoor setting. Parker agreed. He said, I concur. An aircraft is the safest place you can be. It's true of all of our aircraft, he said. They all have the same HEPA filters and airflow. A study conducted by Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health researchers last October found that there was low risk of transmission of the coronavirus on flights. The report said, here's a quote from the report, with its focus on considerations aboard the aircraft, the Phase 1 gate-to-gate report found that through a layered approach to risk mitigation, the scientific evidence shows a low risk of SARS-CoV-2 transmission on aircraft. The report provides evidence that it is possible to leverage technology and modify behavior to allow some near-normal activity while reducing the risks of disease transmission during the COVID-19 crisis. Wouldn't it be nice to get that back to even just to near-normal activity, Cyrus? That would be a welcome thing, wouldn't it?
That would be a win.
Yeah. So these airline CEOs, referring to this report, quoted this part of the report as well. Analysis from the report shows that ventilation of air on aircraft reduces the possibility of exposure to COVID-19 lower than other common settings, such as a grocery store or indoor restaurant. This effectively counters the proximity travelers are subjected to during flights. Because of the frequent exchange of air and HEPA filters on planes, over 99% of the particles containing the virus are removed from the cabin air. Senator Ed Markey, Democrat of Massachusetts, was reportedly enraged by the remarks that the two executives made. Why am I not surprised? He was enraged, saying that he was shocked, and that it was, I added the second shock for effect, and added that it was immoral that we still allow unvaccinated people on planes. I believe, Sarah Nelson, the president of the Association of Flight Attendants, said, I believe that the government has taken a very responsible approach to this. We believe it should continue to stay in place. It's a workplace safety issue. We do need a consistent message through, though. It troubles me, too, to hear different messages. I would hope we are going to stay on the same messages and follow the medical experts and do what's necessary to keep everybody safe. Here's my question. I thought we were supposed to follow the science. And these airline CEOs who are knee-deep in the science of aviation, and they know. Wow, I wasn't expecting that, but that's a good place to put it. Nod your head if you're gonna do that again, Cyrus. That way I'll know to pause. I could pause.
That was a little late.
For effect. That's okay. I like that song. But here's my question. I mean, the airline CEOs, they have a grip on the science, even though they're hired to run a company and to deal with financial issues and things like that. I mean, they have to have some knowledge of the product that they're selling, and the product happens to be airliners that happen to have, as they pointed out, a very sophisticated, very effective air filtration system, such that, as this report indicates, that 99% of all of these particles in the air are removed. Now, this was not their own opinion, as they're adverting to the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health researchers. So these researchers, these scientists, they followed the science, they studied the the circumstances with these airliners in the air, and however they measure such things, they did all that, and they said scientifically it's shown that this is extremely effective. So this is what I don't get, because the follow the science mantra seems to only work if the science, whether real or imagined, is pointing in one direction. But if there's scientific evidence that points in another direction, don't follow that science. Stay away from that science. And those guys who are saying that science, those guys should shut up.
And they are shut up on social media. Scientists that have had talks have had their talks removed because it didn't agree with this particular line of thinking.
That's true.
It's a very interesting time.
It's, information bias. People have biases. We all do. I mean, I freely admit we all have them. I have them. It's best, in my view, if we can mitigate those biases, but everybody has, a bias, and confirmation bias is another term that's used, where you will only sort of accept information that seems to confirm your own bias. So
that's true.
I need to learn to pause more, just knowing that you might pop some of these people in. I like them, though. I haven't heard from her in a while. I don't want that on my karmic record.
I almost played that
right
there.
You almost played it.
Yeah. Ooh, so, I don't want that on my karmic record.
No, I really don't.
No, you really don't. Which I think is what I say every time I hear that. Where was I?
I just derailed you.
Thank you, Cyrus. Yeah, you derailed me.
You're welcome. Well, you know what? I'm excited because the phones are working.
See? I told you.
I had my doubts, but Marty Jury is a genius, and I don't know what he did, but the phones
are working. Mr. Doom and Gloom. I told you I would be optimistic.
I need to look on the bright side, right?
Yes,
stay optimistic.
888-914-9149. So that number now is operable. You can call it and get you on the air. 888-914-9149. So I just want to bring that to your attention. If you fly, maybe the science will win out and they'll recognize that, these planes are safe. You don't have to wear a mask. The CEOs of these major airlines are saying that. I'm pretty confident that the CEO of American Airlines, even though he's outgoing, he probably wouldn't publicly say that before Congress, no less, in a public hearing that's on record. I would be very surprised if he would say that if he did not have ample scientific evidence to back up his claim. And the fact that it's reiterated by the other CEO of the other airline suggests to me that we really should follow that science. 888-914-9149. How about our first caller of the day, Mary in Minneapolis? Welcome to the program.
Hi, Patrick. I just wanted to say that I have flown, during the past while and a number of times, and I would not feel safe sitting next to someone who doesn't have a mask on, and I wouldn't ever fly without a mask, because even if that air is circulating so well, that strange person is sitting right next to me, kind of in my airspace.
Fair enough. I wouldn't feel the least bit bothered by it. And one reason for that, Mary, just to share with you my perspective, is I do a fair amount of flying. I'm not like the most frequent flyer, but I do quite a bit. And before they tightened up the mask mandate a few months ago, if you were eating food, you could have your mask entirely off, and until your meal was done, you could eat for, that could be half an hour maybe, and there were no problems. There was nothing happening. You weren't hearing about people dropping dead from contracting COVID on airliners, and they're very alert to that kind of thing. So then when the mask mandate tightened up again, it was kind of weird, because suddenly now, whereas last week I could have my mask off while I was eating because it was okay with them for half an hour or more sipping my coffee, suddenly now I've got to pull my mask down for a moment, take a sip of coffee, bring my mask up again. That just seemed like a ridiculous exaggeration of the safety measure. So I hear what you're saying, Mary, and I respect you, and I would not want you to feel uncomfortable. But on the other hand, I think most people realize that the mask mandate on airplanes is unnecessary. And I think that's what the CEOs of the airlines were trying to point out. This is unnecessary. It might make people feel good, but it's not really necessary scientifically. I don't know if that changes your mind at all, but that's how it looks to me.
The other suspicion I have always is, you know, the CEOs are pretty heavily invested in what they present, right? So I know they're presenting to Congress. They probably wouldn't perjure themselves, but they're certainly going to be biased towards making the airlines look absolutely safe, which, you know, I know they're absolutely doing their best and they have these great filtration systems, but I guess I'm just not convinced that sitting right next to somebody, you know, that's shoulder to shoulder. That's like very close. So
that's true.
I guess I'm okay with the mask. Yeah,
I understand. And I, you know, again, we may disagree on this point, but I respect your concern for your bodily health. I do. But one thing to think about, you may be right. I don't know if you are, but you may be right about the CEOs trying to put their best foot forward and make the airlines appear more safe than they really are. Although I don't hold that view. But how do you explain the scientists at Harvard who did a deep research on this very issue, and their report said, yeah, basically there is no danger. And 99% of all these things are filtered out. So the scientists would have to be in on it too, I guess. They would have to be fudging, I guess, to come up with that perspective scientifically. Does that seem likely to you that they would do that?
No, no. But I guess just because it's still that 1%, and you know the air is moving. Okay, so the air is moving. That's good, but it's also that person's breath is right next to me. I just visited a friend the other night who had gotten home from work and had a couple beers, and I was sitting on the sofa, and he, you know, I thought, oh wow, I can tell you just had a couple beers.
Oh, you could smell
it. So that means I'm smelling his breath, right?
Yeah, sure.
And it was much less close to him than I would be to a person in the in the airplane who's sitting like right at my shoulder. So
no, I get it. I understand. So I don't want to press the point. I just thought I would share that with you because it seems like there's a lot less risk than people think there is. And getting back to the idea of how we all have our own biases, I have mine, you have yours. It's, you know, it's human.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what happens is people tend to filter out the information that doesn't confirm their bias. And
of
this
course,
is one of those examples,
true.
I think. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Well, stay safe and healthy. Are you doing much flying
you
lately?
Too.
Thank you.
No, I don't fly a lot, but you know, I have flown during the COVID mess and you know, you think about these things. So I think it's important for us all. And I also would love to see Relevant do a piece on, you know, our ERs, our emergency rooms and ICUs are just overwhelmed in the Twin Cities. Our workers are so maxed out after a year and a half plus of this. And I just think we're in another wave. And the majority of the people who are in the ICU are folks who are unvaccinated. So I'm just really on that side of, you know, guys, get your vaccines. It's the least we can do for each other. And I know you and I might be on opposite sides of that one too, but I just think we are having to take care of each other in that way.
I'd like to share something with you, Mary, and I realize that we have to take a break right now, so this might be a good time for me to thank you again for your call. But keep listening, because when we come back, there's some new scientific information that gets right to the heart of what you just said about unvaccinated people. And this is published in The Lancet, which is probably the premier British peer-reviewed medical journal, and it runs counter to the impression that you have on that issue. And I'd like to share that on the air when we come back. So I hope you'll keep listening. And thanks again for calling.
Thanks.
I appreciate it. Thank you. We'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show and some information from a specialist in these matters in The Lancet, of all places, a prestigious British medical journal. You might be surprised at what he wrote about this very issue. I'll tell you about that when I come back. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Merry Christmas time, come and find.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
I hope you have a good one.
Man, I miss Tom Petty. He left us way too soon. Just imagine some of the music he might have made in the last 5 years or so since his death. All right, I promised, I believe the lady's name was Mary, the lady I was just speaking to a minute ago, and I'll be coming back to the phones here in just a minute. But I promised her I would share some information that I ran across yesterday, and I think I may have mentioned it in passing on the program yesterday. I don't remember. But this is from The Lancet, and The Lancet, as I said, is an old, prestigious, peer-reviewed medical journal, maybe one of the top medical journals in the world. It certainly is among the top in the UK. And Dr. Günter Kampf wrote an article, and I have it on Twitter, and I link to the Lancet article itself, so you can read. It's not very long, but you can read it for yourself. And the key passage of what he says, the headline is, COVID-19, stigmatizing the unvaccinated, is not justified. Now, to put this into context, before I share with you this brief excerpt from the article, put this into context, we hear it all the time that the unvaccinated are putting the vaccinated people at risk. And that if you're unvaccinated, you are the problem because you're running around unvaccinated and the people who are vaccinated are in danger because you're not vaccinated. And you can see where this logic begins to break down because, like, isn't that the whole point of the vaccination? Isn't that the reason that we were told anyway a year ago, 8 months ago, that you had to be vaccinated for that reason so you could be free from this? And then as the vaccinations kicked in and more people got vaccinated, it became clear very quickly that nothing really would change for those who were vaccinated. They still have to wear masks. They still have to keep social distance. They still have to, you know, all of the same things that they had to do before. So it was a letdown for people who thought, wait a minute, I thought that's why I'm getting the vaccination, so that I can move beyond this now. So here's what Dr. Kampf says in The Lancet. And again, this is just a selection from it, but you can read the whole thing if you go to my Twitter feed at Patrick Madrid. So he says, in the USA and Germany, high-level officials have used the term pandemic of the unvaccinated, suggesting that people who have been vaccinated are not relevant in the epidemiology of COVID-19. Officials' use of this phrase might have encouraged one scientist to claim that, quote, the unvaccinated threaten the vaccinated for COVID-19. But this view is far too simple. There is increasing evidence, he says, that vaccinated individuals continue to have a relevant role in transmission. In Massachusetts, a total of 469 new COVID-19 cases were detected during various events in July of 2021. And 346, or 74% of these cases, were in people who were fully or partly vaccinated. So the great majority, I'm just going to re-paraphrase this here. In other words, the great majority, 74% of these cases, were vaccinated people, not unvaccinated people. He says 79% of whom were symptomatic. Cycle threshold values were similarly low between people who were fully vaccinated and people who were unvaccinated. So if I understand this correctly, not being a scientist, my understanding is that he's saying that cycle threshold values, as they measure the intensity of the viral load, are about equal, whether you're vaccinated or unvaccinated. He says in people who were unvaccinated, not fully vaccinated, or whose vaccination status was unknown, it indicated a high viral load even among people who were fully vaccinated. In the USA, he says, a total of 10,262 COVID-19 cases were reported in vaccinated people by April 30th of 2021, of whom 26.6% were asymptomatic, 9.7% were hospitalized, and 1.6% died. Again, that goes to the question of the very, very small, in terms of percentages, not numbers, but percentages, the percentage of mortality outcomes is very small, 1.6. Now, that's in that particular population. Then this last sentence says, in Germany, 55.4% of symptomatic COVID-19 cases in patients aged 60 years or older were in fully vaccinated individuals. So it goes on in that vein, but I draw your attention to this. First of all, because it's published in this peer-reviewed journal, which is scientific evidence for and against various views. And what he's pointing out is that most of the time people are saying it's the unvaccinated who are causing the problem. They're the ones who are making everybody sick. They're the one. Look at them. Look at them running around. They don't care. They don't care about other people, and they're not getting vaccinated. But in fact, as he points out, these numbers show that the majority of the people who are giving and getting COVID are vaccinated. And that, of course, cuts against the grain. It's contrary to the popular narrative. And that's why I think voices like his deserve to be heard. So check it out and see what you think. Let's go to Jim in San Antonio. Good morning, Jim.
Hey, good morning. I was just calling to, can you hear me?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I was just calling to comment on the mask mandates on the airlines. I fly for one of the two airlines that you mentioned, so I'm in the airport all the time.
Yeah.
And I think it's time really to make it optional as far as the masks go. The article you referenced that the CEOs were talking about, I think came out before the mask mandate, if I'm not mistaken. We've known for a long time that the air on the airplanes is the cleanest we have. Before the pandemic started, every flu season, they would remind us to make sure we keep the AC systems on until everybody has deplaned, because the HEPA filters are providing cold to flu protection.
Yeah.
So now we have the mask mandate, and you can't go in an airport without hearing, you know, wear your mask.
That's true. Yeah.
Kind of came to its height. There's about at least five different people telling you. And then recently a flight attendant was punched in the nose over a fight about mask compliance. And so what came of that at our airline was they put out data that said basically in the last year, passenger disturbances have been the highest they've ever been. And the common factor in all of them, or in the majority of them, rather, is mask noncompliance. And so my thought is...
You're talking about sorry to interrupt you. You're talking about the vast majority of altercations with passengers? Is that what you mean?
Yes, in-flight altercations that either lead to a removal or perhaps a diversion. The majority of those... So those numbers have gone up considerably in the last year. And then the majority of them that have one common denominator, and it's non-compliance with masks. Yeah, I think the second highest thing was people bringing their own alcohol on the plane.
Yeah, I hear that announcement every single time. Let me ask you a question, because I'm a passenger. Jim, you're a pilot. I don't remember hearing that. And by the way, don't bring your alcohol on the plane. Maybe I don't remember ever hearing that before. Maybe I'm guessing, I'm throwing a dart here. Maybe June 1st. Maybe May or June. It seems like they flipped a switch, and then suddenly every flight after a certain date had that announcement. Is that accurate, or did I just miss it?
I don't remember that being a required announcement. So that became an announcement that they put out a message to the captains, make the following PA. So instead of getting rid of the masks, they said, okay, we want the captain to also reinforce that you have to comply with this mask mandate and wear your mask. And so now it's another one of our required PAs before we take off. So that's like the fifth time you're told, you know, you get it once when you get in the building, once at the gate, the flight attendants make an announcement, and then the captain makes an announcement. So people know that they have to wear their mask. So if they're not wearing their mask, it's not because they haven't been told. But like you said, and like the CEOs pointed out, the airplane is safe. There haven't been known transmissions person to person on the plane that I know of, or they're just not tracking it.
I haven't heard
of
any either.
I haven't either. So I think making it optional would go a long way to improve the safety in flight, because we don't need people fighting in flight. You can't just pull over, you know, and kick them out. It's not like your kids in the car. So I think just that alone, that's just the point I wanted to make, is that I think it's more about control. I think there are people who like telling people what to do, and this is just another place where they can be in charge and say, no, I'm in charge and you have to do what I say.
You must
obey. It's a very visual symbol of who's following the rules and who's not. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of why they like it, because you can't tell who the rule breakers are, you know, if nobody's wearing masks. But
that's
now
a good
you kind of can weed
that's
them
a good
out.
Point. So hypothetical, Jim, hypothetical, in your world as a pilot, let's say that tomorrow the mask mandate was dropped in the airlines. I know it's not going to happen, but let's say it did. Do you think that that would lead to, would the altercations with the angry passengers, would that subside, do you think? Or do you think that would continue, but for other reasons, not mask related?
That's a good question. I think it would take a while to, I think people would, some people would wear them, some people wouldn't. I think it depends on how you roll it out. Mm-hmm. Because I think the altercations now would be between other passengers. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't necessarily be between the passengers and the staff of the airline. It would be between passengers who think everyone still should wear it and passengers going, no, they got rid of the mandate. And so you might open up another issue. That's a good question, because I hadn't considered that, but it might open up another can of worms if it wasn't rolled out in a good way.
Yeah, no, I get it. And I can imagine that you must be up there in the cockpit with the cabin or the cockpit door closed, wondering how are things going back there, and probably like, oh my gosh, somebody's acting up. Have you ever had to get out of the cockpit in flight and go back and tell somebody to settle down?
No, I haven't. I've heard stories, and then some of this starts to get into security procedures, so I can't go into a lot of detail on what we would or wouldn't do in flight. But I mean, we've got multiple options, and it all depends on, you know, really it's communication with our flight attendants. So before each flight, the captain and the flight attendants, you know, have a briefing going over. And this is one of the things we talk about is, you know, if you have any problems with passengers, let us know. Let us know how bad it is, and we'll come up with a decision as a team. And whether we continue on, go back to the gate, divert somewhere else, you know. There's a lot of different options, and so establishing that communication before we even leave the gate is important, because then, you know, that's kind of how the rest of the flight's going to go. And so as long as we've got a good leadership and a good team, you know, we'll get through whatever, whether it's passengers or emergencies or anything.
Mm-hmm. For the most part, in all of my flying years, I joined the American Airlines Advantage program in 1988 when it first started. And I think I'm up to 3 million miles just with American. So I've been in the air quite a bit. And I must say, I have invariably, there have been a few exceptions here and there, but invariably I've been very impressed with the flight crews, with their professionalism and their, you know, dedication. And I can't imagine the pressures that they go through dealing with the public that probably doesn't appreciate, especially the flight attendants, doesn't appreciate what they have to go through. So thank you from my part as a frequent flyer. Thank you for the work that you do in keeping us safe.
Oh, well, thank you for the work you do on the radio station. I just found it a few months ago, and I like it a lot. So it's one of my go-to talk radio stations. And the fact that you guys are out of Wisconsin is even cooler, because that's where I grew up.
Even better. Well, hey, thank you, Jim. Happy trails, safe travels, and I appreciate you calling today. Perfect. Perfect timing, too, because we have to take a break. We'll do that and come right back with more of your questions and comments. The number is 888-914-9149. You can take your mask off while you're listening to this program. I'll be right back. Relevant Radio runs on horsepower. Your horsepower. Donate any vehicle and keep our stations running. Join in with hundreds of other listeners who have donated their used vehicles at relevantradio.com/car.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Holly. She really makes the season jolly.
That's a good song.
Decked divinely, all right. Two tall, green and
we heard all about those terrible tornadoes that ripped through the Midwest last week. And if you're living and listening in the Midwest, you know exactly what I'm talking about. At least 88 people died as of last count. They hit throughout Kentucky and Tennessee. It was just devastating. But one interesting little factoid that I thought you might find interesting about all this is that as these nine states were ravaged by the tornadoes and all of the death and destruction, a little Catholic church, Resurrection Catholic Church, it's in the Diocese of Owensboro, Kentucky. The church itself was severely damaged. You can see pictures of this in the article from Catholic News Agency. But the statue of Mary in the front of the church was untouched. I mean, huge farm implements, trucks, automobiles, buildings, roofs, you name it, things with much, much greater weight, including things that are, you know, close to the ground. Those things were lifted up in the air and thrown for, you know, unimaginable distances. And people locally are looking at this and saying, this is worth taking note of. Bishop William Medley of Owensboro, he says, though no one but the Lord can heal the broken hearts of those who have lost loved ones, I am humbled by the outpouring of support coming to us from around the country and the world. Several bishops have communicated to me that they are asking their parishes to take up a collection for the tornado victims. We received a written message from Pope Francis, and he prayed for Kentucky by name in his Angelus prayer in St. Peter's last Sunday. We know that we are one in Christ and we are never alone. And one of the interesting things associated with this is that this Virgin Mary statue is still standing right in its place where it was before in the midst of all the devastation. So if nothing else, if you like things like that, I see in that a kind of sign of hope. Is it supernatural? You know, probably not, I would guess. It's probably not a supernatural event. Could be, but probably isn't. But nonetheless, it's a happenstance that I think many people can look at and say that even in the midst of these difficult situations, God is still with us. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Jennifer now in Austin. Good morning, Jennifer. Hello, Jennifer.
Hello. Good morning.
There we go. Yeah, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. Sure. A good friend of mine's daughter asked me to be her confirmation sponsor. Mm-hmm. And we went to our first meeting, and in so much we need to do service projects. So I was talking to her about what her humanitarian interests would be, et cetera. And she brought up the whole LGBTQT, and she has a friend who's transgender, and we had a long conversation about that. However, I would love your opinion on how I can talk her through that in the eyes of our faith, especially since we're embarking on this faith journey together. And if you have any resources, that would be good. In Texas, they make their confirmation as a sophomore in high school. So if you had any material, that would be good for us to discuss together, like I said, in sharing. She's also, I mean, I'm happy that she's decided to make her confirmation, but she's also kind of just has a whole bunch of questions as many kids this age would. So
understandable.
I just love your opinion on that.
Happy to comply, Jennifer. So I'll share with you first a few things. Number one, I recommend a book by Abigail Schreier. It's called Irreversible Damage. And the subtitle, I don't have the book in front of me, but the subtitle is worse to the effect of the how the transgender craze is destroying our daughters. Now, that's a book by a woman on the topic of the female side of the transgender issue. I found it very helpful and insightful. So I'd recommend that book. I would also recommend a book by Ryan Anderson. It's called When Harry Became Sally. And it's another very well documented. It's calm. It's not, you know, going after anybody, but it's giving a calm, reasoned analysis of this phenomenon. Where did it come from? Why are we seeing this right now? What are some of the factors involved? And what are some of the ways in which we can reach out and help people who are caught up in this? So as far as books, I would recommend those. I would also recommend a website called sexchangeregret.com. And the man who runs this website, he himself lived as a transgender, quote-unquote, woman for many years. And then he transitioned back to being a man. And, of course, anatomically and when you consider the surgeries and things that went into it, he's not able to return to a normal life as a man, but he's committed to helping people not go down that road because of the way in which so many people who do wind up having deep regrets later, including much higher than normal statistics involving suicide, not to mention substance abuse and other problems. So that would be a website that's replete with videos and articles and other resources that would be useful. And what I'd like to do now, it's called Sex Change Regret.
Regret. Okay.
Mm-hmm. What I like to do now, maybe I can say goodbye to you and thank you for your call. And then I'll share with you an article that I had prepared to read today anyway. It's called What I've Learned Rescuing My Daughter from Her Transgender Fantasy. Would you like to hear that? I think you'll find it very enlightening.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, great. And then once I've finished this, Cyrus will have it posted on the show Twitter feed so you can access it and share it with whoever you want. It's published at stream.org, but I'll share it with you right now if you want to hear it. So,
yes, please.
Good. So thank you for the call, and I hope that these resources are helpful. You're welcome. So here it is. This is from Charlie Jacobs. Now, this is a woman. What I've learned from rescuing my daughter from her transgender fantasy. I think the author's a woman. My daughter's story is no longer novel. Stories like it are occurring in your state, your town, and perhaps even on your street. Gender dysphoria, the incongruence between the mind and the body, moves stealthily and quickly to invade girls and boys alike. But this isn't a cautionary tale. It is a warning. My daughter was an ultra-feminine girl since birth. She insisted that her room be painted pink, and she refused to wear anything but dresses until third grade. She avoided her older brother's toys and sports, choosing tea sets and Shopkins, a series of tiny collectible toys. Her favorite activity was to slip into my closet and don my few sparkly clothes with the shiniest of heels. She rejected sports in favor of art and sewing. That all abruptly changed when she turned 12. As her body matured into young womanhood, she stopped begging for a bikini and avoided any clothing that accentuated her figure. She hid her breasts under men's extra-large sweatshirts. I remember doing similar things as my body changed, so I didn't worry at first. Then my daughter immersed herself into anime art and cosplaying, the hobby of dressing like fantastical characters. I supported her creative side. I didn't know that anime and cosplaying can overwhelm a young mind. I didn't know that anime and cosplaying involved gender-bending themes and that the community crosses into pedophilic and sexual themes. I also didn't know that the older cosplay community groomed the younger cohorts. During that same time period, my daughter went through Teen Talk, a Manitoba, Canada-based program that says it provides, quote, youth with accurate, non-judgmental information on sexuality, reproductive health, body image, substance use awareness, mental health, issues of diversity and anti-violence issues. This was all at her public school. She came home with a whole new language. She and all her girlfriends discussed their labels: polyamorous, lesbian, pansexual. None of the five girls chose basic, their term for a straight girl. Now I was worried. She distanced herself from her old friends and spent more time online. I checked her phone, but I was not astute enough to know that she had set up appropriate fake social media accounts for my viewing. An older girl showed romantic interest in her. I barred that girl from our home. I learned later that she had molested my daughter. When my daughter was in the eighth grade, as a Christmas gift, I took her to SAC Anime, an anime convention in Sacramento, California. There she met a girl 3 years her senior, but light years more mature. That girl mesmerized my daughter with her edginess or magnanimous personality. The older girl went by they. After the meeting, my daughter got a boy's haircut, stopped shaving, and her legs, I presume, and asked for boys' underwear. My daughter parroted everything about the older teen. She started making gross TikTok videos. Her language became vulgar, and she redecorated her room to look like a cave. She self-pierced her nose with one of those bull rings. She broke every family rule. She was morphing into an emo goth vampire-like creature. She was unrecognizable. Her personality descended into anger and rudeness. The summer before ninth grade, she announced that she was transgender. Post-announcement, she began to threaten suicide. She sunk into deep depression. I managed to get all of her passwords to all of her social media accounts. What I saw was jaw-dropping. Almost everyone that she was conversing with was a stranger, except for the SAC anime friend who sent her a self-made immoral video. The discussions on the Discord platform online involved fetishistic sexual conversations. Kids were sending each other erotica, including involving incest and pedophilia. Older girls were instructing younger girls how to sell unclothed photos of themselves to men for money. Girls bragged about their different mental illnesses. They talked about which drugs do what. They talked about how they are really boys, not girls. They discussed top surgery, that is, mastectomies, and other things. I won't quote everything in the article. You can read it for yourself. My daughter's electronic devices were filled with TikTok videos and YouTubers talking about how great they feel now that they had transitioned. There were messages in which strangers told her to kick my head in because I was a transphobe for refusing to call her by her male name. I went nuclear. I took the phone and stripped it of all social media, YouTube, Instagram, Discord, Reddit, Pinterest, Twitter. I even blocked her ability to get to the internet. I deleted all of her contacts and changed her phone number. I sat next to her while she attended school online via Zoom. I deleted YouTube from the smart TVs and locked up the remotes. I took every anime book from her room. I threw away all of her costumes. I banned any friend who was even in the slightest bit unsavory. I involved the police about the porn. I printed out the law and informed her that if anyone sent her porn, I would not hesitate to prosecute. She hated me like an addict hates the person preventing her drug fix. I held my ground despite the constant verbal abuse. After going through 7 mental health professionals, I found an out-of-state psychiatrist who was willing to examine the causality for my daughter's sudden trans identity. I immersed myself in reading everything on the issue, talking to other parents and other professionals. I worked unceasingly to recreate the bond that she and I used to share. After a year and a half of utter hell, my daughter is finally returning to her authentic self, a beautiful, artsy, kind, and loving daughter. I'm not sure what the actual ingredients for the magic potion were for alleviating gender dysphoria in my daughter. The formula will vary, but what I did was, after a very brief misstep of using a male name, our family and all the adults in my child's life only used her birth name and corresponding pronouns. We did not permit social transition, although we could not control the school setting. Unbelievably, our local Catholic high school refused to follow our edict. As I mentioned previously, we pulled the plug on all social media and her access to anyone other than those persons we vetted. I forced my daughter to listen to specific podcasts on the subject while driving her to school. I printed out stories about female detransitioners, women who had medicalized but then regretted their actions and returned to living as women, and left them throughout the house. I left all my research out in plain view, including Irreversible Damage, that is the book I just mentioned, Gender Dysphoria, a Therapeutic Model for Working with Children, and then a few other books. He says, I followed the advice of Parents for Ethical Care's podcast and the book Desist, Detrans and Detox, Getting Your Child Out of the Gender Cult by Maria Keffler. I worked hard to take back the close relationship my daughter and I once had. I bit my tongue until it bled. I took her anger and only responded with love, or I walked away when I knew she would respond poorly. I caught her in vulnerable moments and hugged her or climbed into her bed. I stopped looking at her as though she were a victim of a scheme or a monster. I let her know that I would never stop fighting for her. I let her see my posters from the protests I attended. I peppered her with questions that demonstrated the illogic of the gender ideology. I happened to have funny gender-critical memes on my computer when she walked into my office. Most importantly, I held my ground. I refused to accept her delusion with compassion. I know that I have to continue to be tenacious as the gender ideology has crept into every facet of life. But for now, I can breathe a sigh of relief. Oh my gosh. What that family must have gone through. What that poor girl has gone through. This is an important article that you need to know about. You need to read. You need to share it. So we'll have it posted for you on the show Twitter feed at P Madrid Show. You can also go to relevantradio.com/Patrick and grab it there. But please do share it and assimilate it. It's very important. I'll be back with hour 2 right after this.